Before we get started with the show today, I think it's important to note what just happened on Friday and Saturday night. So, a couple weeks ago now, Iran attacked Israel with a massive strike. It was over 350 some missiles and drones, and it did absolutely no damage in the end, which is thank God for that, really. I'm grateful that Iran's technology is absolutely terrible. So, I mean, when someone attacks you with 350 missiles, you kind of expect that nation that they attacked to retaliate. And that's what happened this weekend. Israel struck Iran. They didn't throw 350 missiles back at Iran. Instead, what they did is they targeted Isfahan. And the city of Isfahan is the city where Iran has their nuclear facilities. So there's a couple things that are really important to note before we get on to the rest of this episode, and that's Israel didn't attack Isfahan in order to destabilize Iran. What Israel did was only to show Iran that they can attack Iran no matter what Iran does. They will attack them, and they can successfully do what they're trying to accomplish. So if Israel wants to completely take out Iran's nuclear facilities, they can do that, and Iran can do nothing to stop them. So Israel can successfully attack Iran when, where, and how they please. That was what Israel was trying to prove to Iran by the weekend attack, and it looks like it worked. So Iran reported the attack on their state-run media as minuscule, something that accomplished almost nothing. And the reason why Iran is saying the attack did nothing is because they don't want to go to an all-out war with Israel, and so they're downplaying the attack so they don't have to attack Israel again. So Israel retaliating against Iran is not an escalation of the war. It actually de-escalated the war. Israel shooting rockets at certain areas, specific areas in Isfahan, and using a couple suicide drones in Isfahan to target aerial defenses and the nuclear facilities was actually a de-escalation of the war. And I know it's really confusing, but to help you understand it, just look at it this way. After the attack on Iran that Israel just did, the war is less likely to expand because Iran is de-escalating their own actions. So that's essentially what happened this weekend. It was a good thing Israel succeeded. As far as I know, there are no casualties reported, so it was a very, very great success for Israel. Moving on to the actual episode today, though. So that was just a quick update because I like to stay updated with the Middle East, especially because it's all of these conflicts in the world today, like Europe and Ukraine, and I mean Ukraine's part of Europe, but Europe and Israel and the rest of the Middle East, they're all kind of deciding our policies today. I mean, we're spending a lot of money on giving aid to Ukraine. We're spending a lot of money on giving aid to Israel. We're spending a lot of money on giving aid to Gaza, of all places. So it's just, for me, it's important to stay up to date with this stuff. I like to know where my taxpayer dollars are going to and what they're paying for. I think it's important. So to start off the episode, let's talk about the $95 billion foreign aid bill that was just brought up by Speaker Mike Johnson. So this $95 billion aid package was kind of separated, voted on independently. Every single part of it passed. It was voted on independently and then bundled back together and sent to the Senate. So to make that make sense, basically, the House passed the $95 billion aid package. Now the Senate has to pass it. That's putting it in layman terms. And what was in this aid package wasn't just aid. It was really interesting to see the aid package because it was a few billion for Ukraine, a few billion for Israel, a few billion for Gaza, and a few billion for Taiwan. I believe it was 60 some billion for Ukraine, actually, and a little over 10 billion for Israel, and the rest for Gaza and the Indo-Pacific. So it wasn't just that, though. So here's the important thing we have to understand. A few months ago, or 1 month ago, about the House passed a bill that would potentially ban TikTok. And I did a whole episode about banning TikTok a little while ago. You can go back and listen to it if you want. It's really interesting bill. And what it does is it says, hey, ByteDance, you're a Chinese company, And because you're a Chinese company, we don't want your major media company in the United States. So what we're going to do is force you to divest or sell TikTok, or TikTok will get banned. That was what the bill did. And they amended the bill with this aid package. They packaged it, they bundled it into the aid package, which I do like this one time. I'm a fan of bundling that for this one time, just because it forces the Senate to vote on it. So now what's going to happen is, instead of it taking, all the new bill really did, it extended the amount of time for ByteDance to sell TikTok. So when this bill passes, which it will, and Biden signs it, which he will, then about a year from then, that's how long TikTok has to be bought by an American company. And if they're not bought by an American company, they'll be banned in the United States. You won't be able to download it on your phones. That's how it's going to work. So we'll see how this goes. I really think that's a great bill. I'm not a fan of TikTok. I don't do the TikTok dances or anything. So you could call me biased, but TikTok is kind of ridiculous. I mean, put this into perspective again. China doesn't allow their people to have American-made media companies like WeChat or WhatsApp, not WeChat. I was combining WeChat and WhatsApp. China doesn't allow their people to have WhatsApp. They have WeChat instead, and that's a Chinese company. And for some odd reason, America doesn't take note of that and decide to ban Chinese media companies like WeChat or TikTok. And I'm not a fan of China not using our companies while we use their companies. That means they have influence over us. So I'm perfectly fine with banning TikTok. I think it's a ridiculous app and it promotes dystopian ideals and it's kind of communist. So I'm not a fan of it in general and I'm for the ban. But there's a bad thing that's coming about with passing this new bill. When this new bill passes, which it did pass the House, but when it passes the Senate and gets signed by President Biden, what we're going to very likely see is Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to try to oust Speaker Johnson. And she's been saying she's going to do this for a while now. She's been holding it over his head. But what's really annoying here is that Speaker Johnson is really not doing anything bad. I don't blame him for passing the Ukraine aid bill or anything like that. I really don't. Because right now the incentive structures say he has to. The majority of the House is literally for those things. I know half of the Republican Party isn't for those aid bills. But the other three quarters of the House, including all of the Democrats and half of the Republicans, are for it. So it's kind of hard to just say, no, I'm not going to give the majority what the majority wants. Even though he's a Republican speaker. It's kind of hard to do that. So I do not blame Mike Johnson for what he did. And I think Mike Johnson is doing about as good of a job as anyone can do, considering he has a split Republican caucus. I mean, look at the Republicans in the House right now. They're arguing over who they want the Speaker of the House to be. Arguing over that. And they don't even have an alternative. They're arguing, saying they don't want Speaker Johnson. So, okay, fine. You don't want Speaker Johnson. Who do you want to be Speaker of the House? Matt Gaetz? He said he's not going to do it. He's probably going to be running for governor soon. Marjorie Taylor Greene? She doesn't want to be Speaker. All of these people. Lauren Boebert? She doesn't want to be Speaker. Kevin McCarthy? He's not even in the House anymore. He's done. Jim Jordan? We tried him. You could have voted for Jim Jordan, but they didn't. They're fighting over Speaker of the House again because they don't like what Mike Johnson is doing. But fine, you don't like what Mike Johnson is doing? How about before you oust him, you tell me who you want to replace him and you make sure that that person can be voted in as Speaker with one vote. One vote. And it doesn't take months to get that vote. How about that? Then we can talk about switching speakers up, which I'm still not for it, because even if you do switch the speakers up, it doesn't matter. They're going to do the exact same things. All it takes are a few Republican defectors to get a Democrat bill passed. That's all it takes. So with this Republican caucus is doing right now is absolutely crazy and insane. Stop infighting. We are just a few months away from a presidential election where all of you can lose your jobs. And you're more likely to lose your jobs if you infight than if you simply, what's it called, virtue signal. Nobody cares that you can virtue signal. Everyone can do that. Stop infighting. Drop what you're doing. Pass bills that people want passed. Pass a tax cut. Make the Senate refuse to cut taxes. That would be a great idea to start with. If you want to do these political games, then do it in a good way. For example, passing tax cuts, you'll make the Democrats not vote for a tax cut. That would hurt them in the election. Do bills like that. Don't fight over who should be Speaker of the House. That's ridiculous. Don't try to stop the Ukraine aid. You're not going to before the election. It's just not going to happen. When two-thirds or three-quarters of the House are for Ukraine aid, you will not be able to stop Ukraine aid from happening. No matter how Republican and how much you virtue signal, it does not matter. So that's happening, and I'm not very happy with Green. I'm really not a fan of Marjorie Taylor Greene. She basically worships Donald Trump. And I know I'm voting for Donald Trump this November. I'm voting for him not because I worship him, not because I'm a cult member, but because I think he's better than Joe Biden and better than RFK. That's why I'm voting for Donald Trump. Now, all of this can be different. Like, it'll be confusing, okay? We'll watch how this all goes, but with Marjorie Taylor Greene and the other Republicans essentially worshiping Donald Trump, we'll see how the 2028 election goes when Donald Trump isn't on the ballot. I wouldn't be surprised if the Republican Party just kind of splits apart at that point. But we'll see how it goes. We have a different election to focus on first. So 2024 is this next election we got to focus on. And I got to say, I'm excited. This is the most excited I've ever been for any election just because it's a redo of 2020. And they're not my preferred candidates. I would have rather had DeSantis go against Joe Biden, but it's not that way. So it's even still, I'm incredibly excited for this election to play out because we have multiple factors playing in. So first of all, Joe Biden is way less popular than he was. His approval rating when he entered office was around 55%. His approval rating right now is sitting around 39%, according to the 538 polling average. That is way lower. That is a decrease of about 16 points. No president in the history of America that had an approval rating of 39% at this point in time ever won re-election or any election. Ever. It's really simple as that. Now, 2016 was the most unpopular election in American history. Donald Trump had an approval rating of about 45%, and Hillary Clinton had an approval rating of about 44 or 43%. This year, Donald Trump has an approval rating of about 40%, and Joe Biden has an approval rating of about 39%. This is the most unpopular election since 2016, and even more unpopular than 2016. That is a big factor that's going to be playing out in this election, and I really can't wait to see how it goes. So Nevada looks like it might turn red. Arizona will turn red again. Georgia will turn red again. It looks like Wisconsin will be red. I'm not sure about Michigan or Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania keeps flipping from red and blue on the polls, so I really don't know which way Pennsylvania would go. Same as Michigan. Michigan right now is consistently red by about 3 points. But in reality, will it actually vote for Trump by 3 points? Probably not. Maybe it will, but I doubt it. We'll see how it goes. So this election is turning out to be incredibly exciting. Now, here's a really important thing to know. I'm 19 years old, so I am part of Generation Z, and I'm not proud of it. I really do not like being part of Gen Z, but I am. So I guess kind of what I gotta live with. Not proud of my generation at all. But there is something good. Trump is polling really well among young voters. Now, he's still losing young voters. Biden has the young vote, and that's not going to change this election cycle. But what's changed is how much support Trump has gained among young voters. So in 2020, he lost young men by about 26 points and young women by around 30 to 40 points. He lost them by that many. Now, according to polls and interviews done by Reuters, Trump is actually losing young men by 6 points. That is a 20-point increase for Trump when compared to 2020. And he's doing about the same as he did with women. So he's made enormous gains among young men. And that is specifically because, first of all, Biden is just incredibly unpopular when it comes to men. And second of all, because people like Jordan Peterson and Matt Walsh and Michael Knowles talk about the dystopian effects of not getting married and whatnot. And it turns out men actually do like the ideas of getting married and having a family and getting a job. Men actually like those ideas more than, in this case, at this current point in time, more than women. And so what you're seeing is the male support for Joe Biden and more liberal type candidates just erode like crazy because those liberal type candidates support the leftist views of don't get married, do whatever you want with whoever you want, kill your children, don't raise a family, those types of things. So the young men are becoming more and more conservative while young women are staying about the same. And that could cause a major problem with marriage. So I expect to see either a large rise in divorces in about 5 years or a large rise in the number of conservative women in the next 5 years. Either be because the liberal women marry a conservative man and then the woman becomes conservative, or because the liberal woman marries a conservative man and then they decide they can't live with each other anymore and they get divorced, which is sad. So I can see that happening in the next 5 years, but as for right now, it looks like young voters are breaking for Trump at an increasing margin. I mean, Biden's still winning them, don't get me wrong, but they're becoming more and more conservative, and I'm very grateful for that. Another factor that can definitely impact this election is RFK Jr. And RFK Jr. is kind of like a long shot candidate. He's obviously not going to win the election, but he's on the ballot in a few of the swing states. And that's good. That means he will be pulling votes from Biden to Trump in those swing states. And that's a good thing. Because so there's a recent poll that shows that RFK Jr. takes more votes from Trump than he does from Biden. But that is the only poll I've ever seen that says that. Every other poll, I think since the beginning that these were ever taken, shows RFK taking more votes from Biden than from Trump. Especially in the swing states like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Nevada, and Georgia, and North Carolina. But North Carolina is voting for Trump anyway, so we don't have to worry about that one. So RFK taking these votes from Biden will be a massive plus for Trump, because that means instead of Trump winning Nevada by 0.2%, he'll probably win Nevada by 0.7% or maybe 1%. Same with Georgia and Arizona and Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania. All of those states, he's probably going to win by a larger margin. So RFK being on the ballot in those states helps Trump, especially as this race gets closer and closer. Because the race is tightening. Trump's polling average is getting lower and lower. So it is tightening up. And it's going to continue doing that as the election comes forward, unless something happens between now and the election. We'll have to see, though, what happens. So in conclusion, Johnson is hanging on by a thread in the House. And I'm not kidding you when I say that, with Johnson hanging on by a thread. If you remember, Marjorie Taylor Greene wants to oust him. The only reason why Johnson won't get ousted in the House, and I know this for a fact, is because there are enough Democrats to vote for Johnson than there are for Republicans to vote against Johnson. So Johnson is literally depending on a few Democrats to keep him in the speakership position until the next election in November. That is how much of a thread Johnson is hanging on by. And Trump is continuing to lead in the polls. So despite his low approval ratings, obviously, and that's really interesting because even though the polls are getting tighter and tighter, Trump is still leading and he is making gains among Hispanic voters, Black voters, young voters. He's making gains among literally every single demographic except for young women. That's it. Here's a piece of advice for you. Vote for Trump. Trump wasn't my first choice. bit of a story time. I used to be part of this thing called the Trump cult. And I was young. I couldn't vote yet, but I loved Donald Trump. I mean, everything I did had to be about Donald Trump. And that's saying something because my name's Reagan. I'm named after Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan died, I believe, 18 days before I was born. That's why I was named after him. And then I just went all in for Trump when Trump became president. And Trump is nothing like Ronald Reagan. He really isn't. So take my advice in this. When you're voting this November, don't think about whose ego you're going to prop up. Don't think about whose net worth is going to go up. Because, by the way, Biden's net worth has gone up under his presidency. Just saying. Trump's net worth went down. Just saying. Don't think about any of that. Instead, think about which candidate supports your values more. There is no perfect candidate this election. This is the most unpopular one we've ever had. So vote based on which candidate upholds your value the most. None of them will uphold all of them, unless you're part of a cult. And I know people who are part of the Biden cult. Because it exists. And when you go to the polling stations to vote, don't just vote for a president. Look in your district. Who is running for the House of Representatives? Who is running for your state senate? Who is running for your federal state senate? All of these things you can vote for. And you need to. Look up and do your research on which candidates support your beliefs the most and vote for that candidate. That is how we can ensure that America becomes a better place to live for everyone. Well, that wraps up the episode today, guys. Thank you for tuning in. I'll catch you all later. Adios, and God bless you.